When you go to some of the bookshops that you see in and around us in London, central London, there's always a section of what we can call popular self-help psychology. And it seems that one of the great virtues commended in these types of books today is you must have high self-esteem and you must have ambition that you're ever aiming to get higher and higher until hopefully you get to the top. And as one writer observes Dr. Breyers, with a critical eye in a book called Psychobabble, he says this: high self-esteem isn't a luxury, it's a necessity for everyone who has important goals to achieve. The idea that we have limitless, untapped resources within us is one of popular psychology's most enduring leitmotifs. I think that's a fairly appropriate comment. Well, Jacob, tent dweller, shepherd out in the fields, he didn't have any local bookshop to go along to find a book on self-help psychology, to say the least, to improve his self-image and his achievements, because he had a very good self-image. And in fact, I reckon that he could have written a book himself about how to promote yourself, good self-image, because he was a man who seemed to esteem himself very highly, and he was a determined man. And he could also write a book then, further on, about how he discovered that his real strength was in his weakness, not his strength, but in God alone. And learning with the Apostle Paul, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Well, we're going to look at this story of Jacob, and I'm referring back to earlier chapters as well. Three headings: Jacob's weakness, Jacob's prayer, and Jacob's strength. Jacob's weakness, Jacob's prayer, and Jacob's strength. Well, first of all, Jacob's weakness. And if you know the full story of Jacob going back a few chapters, you may well say, well, doesn't Genesis 25 verse 27 essentially tell us that he was a weak man, not a strong man? I quote, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man dwelling in tents. So there you get a picture of a sort of home-loving boy, not very outward-going. He just sat around at home all the time. But that's not exactly what is meant there. It's setting the two brothers, Jacob and Esau, into contrast with one another. Esau, well, he was a wanderer, he was restless, he was rather rough and ready. He was a very skillful and, we could say, a very wily hunter. That was Esau. And then Jacob, well, yes, he was the opposite. He stayed in and around home. That is, he stayed in and around the tents. And what the word is really telling us there is that he's a self-controlled man. In fact, dwelling amongst the tents, he was what we might call a pastoralist. He was the one who helped to keep the flocks and the herds. Not an inactive man, but a much calmer, more restrained and self-controlled man than this very rough-and-ready brother Esau. He wasn't a weak man. A number of things, for example, tell us that Jacob was a very strong man, physically speaking. He was very fit and very strong. Just take his age when he fled to Haran, that 550-mile journey in the north from the anger of his brother Esau. Putting together various facts and figures and numbers from the book of Genesis, as one Bible scholar, Liam Wood, calculates, Jacob was 77 years old when he made that journey. I don't think I could do that, 4 or 5 miles, and that's almost enough for me if I can get that far. And it was a long journey northeast to Haran. And then in Haran, he was a very successful keeper of the flocks, of the sheep and other animals for the next 20 years. That brings him up to 97. I wonder what some of us will be doing at the age of 97, if we get that far. And when he finally died, well, he was 130 plus. So physically, he was a very strong man. And not only was Jacob physically a very strong man, but by temperament, he was a very determined man. He knew what he wanted, and by hook or by crook, he would get it. And in the matter of the firstborn son's birthright, which I should come back to later, he got it. In effect, twice over, he was determined, and by various tricks, he got what he wanted. But this is where his very strengths were also certain points in his life. They were his weaknesses, and it can be like that with us, that our very strengths, we can misuse them, and they can become our weaknesses. And so in Genesis 25, when Esau came from hunting in the fields, famished, exhausted, quite exhausted, and not the most rational of men, very impulsive man it would seem, Jacob took a very unfair advantage of him and offered to feed his brother for a pot of Middle Eastern stew if his brother verbally would hand over the birthright. And to say it verbally was to be binding. There was no going back. And so at that point, he deceived his brother Esau to hand over the birthright. That firstborn son's birthright being a larger portion of the family inheritance, and also the headship of the family when the father died. And then Genesis 27, it really is a direct sequel to what happened in Genesis 25. Isaac sent Esau out to hunt game because Isaac wanted that special pot of stew that Esau could do fresh. And Jacob and his mother, they conspired together deceitfully to trick Isaac into giving the birthright directly by God's blessing. I have to excuse that, by God's blessing, tricked at that point, by God's blessing, to bestow it on Jacob. And so twice over on the same point, Jacob acted in this particular deceitful way. Determined, but that determination, so good in some circumstances, not so good in this situation. Of course, it's not surprising when this restless and impulsive man Esau, when he returned and found out how he'd been tricked, deceived after the firstborn's blessing by that official blessing from the father, Jacob fled. Esau wanted to murder him, and he fled northeast to Haran, and there for the next 20 years, Haran, by the way, it's in southerly part of Turkey, the ancient ruins of Haran, and there he remained for about 20 years, tending the flocks of his uncle Laban, Haran, where Jacob's sins found him out. And that's so often a principle of life, isn't it? Everything boomeranged back on him. This trickster, this man who had deceived in a matter so serious, it all boomeranged back on him. Laban, for the next 20 years, acting very deceitfully in the matter of marriage, where Jacob wanted to marry one person, Rebecca, but Laban got him to marry her sister, first of all, Leah, and then Rebecca. And he was tricked into a double marriage that he didn't want. And his wages were changed and changed. And so his own sins, in effect, had come back upon his own head. And that's how it continued for 20 years, when really Jacob was little more than a slave labourer on behalf of his uncle. Now, as to why Jacob felt this need to achieve what he wanted in the first instance, by trickery, by deceit, well, really, he did so because he was failing to trust God fully. And I think that's the simple, basic point here. Now, those of you who know the story of Jacob and Esau at their birth, Esau born first, and then Jacob, the second born of two twins, God had promised to Rebekah at the very birth of Jacob that although he was the second born of those two twins, he would have the preeminence, he would have the birthright. He would become head over his own brother, and his brother Esau would serve him. In other words, it was the reversal of the normal, expected, natural order of things. And as Jacob grew up, well, we realise again from the narrative that he was very much Rebekah's favourite. He stayed at home, he was around the tents, and he was Rebekah's favourite. And part of that probably because she was aware of that promise, she'd never forgotten that promise, and it's most unlikely.